Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. This is Jen, and for new and returning listeners, you may know you can find the podcast at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com or on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And I am very enthusiastic, note I said enthusiastic and not excited this time, to have Junior Literary Agent at Talcott Notch Literary Services, contributor to PubHub, and one of the judges on the judging committee for the We Need Diverse Books Walter Grant, Saba Suleiman. It's always nice to have literary agents and a variety of people in different aspects of it. And Saba, you've been an agent for several years now?
I've been assisting and sort of, I guess, getting my feet wet for a while. I actually have a non-traditional path because the first year of my agenting, my first official year, I got pregnant. Then I had to take some time off, also because I didn't have a very easy pregnancy, and then, of course, for maternity leave. So yes, it does seem like I've been here forever, but I'm really only just beginning.
Well, I mean, in terms of the whole being in the world of agenting, would it be fair to say a couple years, a few years?
Sure, yeah. It would have been, oh my goodness, a lot of years. You're right.
Yes. Not to make you look way back into the, know, that right? crystal ball and say, good God, where am I now?
Yes, I have been in the agenting world for quite some time.
Yeah, and you've been a great literary citizen as well. Very generous of your time and your knowledge base. So I'm very happy to have you on and be able to talk to you about your experiences and get your opinions and thoughts on everything. Because I feel like you've been very immersed in the conversations that have gone on.
Well, thank you, first of all. And I enjoy doing it. And I enjoy contributing any way I can. It's not just completely, you know, when you do something out of the goodness of your heart, it's not just that.
So, and your listener, which I'm also enthusiastic about, I appreciate when people who are on the podcast are listeners. So it's always like, yay, you kind of know where this is going. So you know what the first question is going to be.
I do. Go for it.
And so you mentioned having a non-traditional path. And you had majored in economics and Middle Eastern studies, as well as Persian literature. And while we were saying this isn't quote unquote traditional or the trademark path, I'm wondering what it was that really lit that fire into you to pursue a publishing career, especially in agenting, which I, having spoken with so many guests, including previous agents, a lot of people don't think about as part of the publishing landscape.
Right. So yeah, you're absolutely right. There is no such thing as a trademark path in general, because most of the work we do in publishing is learned on the job, especially as an agent. There are internships, but those are rare, especially paying ones, especially given the fact that you're right, we are looking more to sort of employ marginalized communities in our industry. So there's certainly, the internships are not the only path towards establishing a career in publishing, and it's certainly not how I started in terms of just right out of college or during college, which is how a lot of people get their start. I stumbled into publishing, which a lot of my peers have, because most of us, I think, sort of all we knew was we love to read, and we always had that at the back of our heads. As you mentioned, I don't think a lot of us understood the marketing aspect of books, in that we thought, okay, well, books are published, someone writes them, and I suppose someone edits them, but of course there's marketing, there's publicity, and of course there are agents who buy and sell books on behalf of their clients. Well, sell. You know, I was in graduate school and I was studying Persian literature, as you mentioned, and I was coming to the gradual conclusion that I didn't think I was ready to get my PhD, which was the natural next step for me. So then I was like, well, what else can I do with my skills? So I made my little jaunt to the career office and I was like, I can read and I can write. What do you have for me? And, you know, I dabbled a little bit in journalism. I interned at a magazine as well. I really enjoyed it. And I think that introduced me to the idea of what goes behind a publication and how exciting that world is. But then I graduated from graduate school and I was looking for, you know, any kind of in and a connection. I reached out to a lot of my college and grad school alumni and alumnus, and you know, a lot of them were really useful, had gave me really useful information as I was sort of gathering information about what I could do and how to get into publishing. But I got really lucky because I moved to Connecticut right after graduate school, and I was really casually looking at job descriptions, and I found an internship for Sourcebooks editorial intern. And I applied out of the blue, and I really had no idea that they would call me pretty much within the week. Mm. And it was for their romance imprint at Casablanca, which I'd never read any romance in my entire life before that interview. So I did not think I would get that internship, but, you know, I hit it off with my interviewer, who eventually became one of my coworkers, and I worked there for about a year. It was amazing, honestly. It was a small office, so I basically got to sort of dive into the publishing world by doing everything from comps research to writing back cover copy to, you know, at the end, I was actually also, you know, getting to do first and second reads on manuscripts, and I was managing submissions as well. So it was like a full kind of training in publishing. And then after that, I was like, well, what's my next step? I know I want to be in publishing. I think I want to do editorial, but, you know, let's see what agenting's all about. And I started assisting with my current boss. And I never looked back because I absolutely loved it. So that's how I got to agenting. To be completely honest, even while I was in editorial at Sourcebooks, I wasn't entirely sure what agents did. When I started agenting, I was like, oh, this is fantastic. I could totally see myself doing this for a living, just, you know, being in the book world, but also interacting with people and advocating for authors, and just it was a good fit for me personally. So
Do you feel like, in terms of agenting versus editorial, and I had asked some other people this before, that there is just more freedom in agenting, and that was also a big boon for you to pursue that versus being within the kind of corporate structure? Not that agenting doesn't necessarily have to deal with that, but it's in an alternate way.
There is certainly some freedom in that you have more latitude in terms of what you can acquire for your list. At least that's been my case. I know that there are some requirements for different agents at different agencies, so that may not be the case universally. But yes, I would say that it did. It was an attractive idea for me to be able to just read a manuscript, fall in love with it, and start working with it, and not feel as though I would have to jump through a million hoops to get to work with the author. But, you know, I think editorial has its own sort of bright side in some senses. I think a lot of people think that agenting or assisting at an agent is a great way to sort of get their foot in the door for editorial, which it is. But the skill sets are now, I would say, becoming more similar because editors tend to be author advocates within the house. But they still get away with not having to be as, I guess, they don't have to necessarily have the people skills and the kind of personality that being an agent really requires. So I've seen a lot of interns with us who sort of start off enthusiastically thinking they may be able to do this, but they end up not liking it because they're really shy or they're not comfortable talking passionately about the books that they love or the books that they want because they just want to read all the time. And that's fine and that's great, but I think for agenting, that's not the whole picture. Yeah.
That's actually good to get into because I feel as though the nitty-gritty of agenting is being kind of, maybe it's an unfair categorization of saying jack of all trades because you're an editor, you're a publicist, you know, you're a therapist, you are...
So true.
You really are. And you're helping with sales, you know, you're thinking of all these things and your mind may be in a push-pull situation consistently because it's not only about making a great book. Is that fair to at least touch upon?
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but I think it depends on our perspective. I find the idea of being all of those things exciting. It's a dynamic job in that sense. I get to read, but I also get to talk and I get to interact with all of these amazing, passionate people. I get to fight for my clients. I get to create buzz for their books. It's just it's not a fit for a person who wants one very specific or a few very specific things out of their careers or mm-hmm. out of their work with books. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it can feel like you're doing a lot of things, but I like that aspect of it. It just fits my personality more. And for that reason, I also enjoy the fact that I get to acquire in different genres as well. It's kind of the same concept because I do know a lot of agents who start off at generalist agencies like mine, and they feel the pressure of sort of having to keep their toes dipped in a different genres. It is more work in that you have to keep track of what's selling and what's sort of doing well in the different markets. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. in some senses, it's more work. It can be more pressure, but if you enjoy the idea of working in different you know, genres or categories, then that's great. You have a lot of freedom. So I think, yeah, like I said, it's really about your perspective.
In doing the podcast, it's always great to, like I said in the top of the show, is to have everyone talk so specifically about what their job is. Because I feel like even if I had one agent on, it's not enough to really encompass.
Yeah, it's a very...
The multitudes of this job.
Yes, yes. So. I myself, whenever I meet up with the agent, I always ask them exactly how their agency works and what's mm-hmm. going on and like how much they're if there are any expectations, is there a salary? Like, I mean, it's just so different from agency to agency. Mm-hmm. I mean, the general concept is obviously the same, but mm-hmm. yes, things vary a lot in terms of, you know, how we function, how we work, our work environment. We work remotely. Do we work, you know, in mm-hmm. New York? What kind of list do we have? How do we deal with our clients? All that stuff. It's just very different, which is why choosing an agent is a big decision, because really you can have completely different experiences with agents mm-hmm. across the board depending on how they operate. And mm-hmm. of course, it's also a different, it depends on the personality as well. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm sorry, we're not regulated.
So it's good to hear that you actually talk too, because I remember saying at Quelly, the recent Children's Lit of Color conference,
yeah,
that it seems as though we don't talk enough, or maybe people don't know that we're talking, so people are afraid to get information and to ask. So it's nice to hear there are questions being asked and that people are sharing information, not as though in a covert way, just kind of like, so is this normal?
One of my big pet peeves about this industry is that it operates under such clandestine circumstances sometimes. Yes. Like, oh, this is a secret. We don't know what's going on. And it's just like, I think authors deserve to know how their careers mm-hmm. are going to be handled mm-hmm. and what's going on. How are things going to function? And there's a lot of secrecy that things operate in. We all have to rely on things like notice boards and Absolute Right. And it's just like, who knows who has a personal vendetta with someone and is just spreading stuff about them, you know? Like, it's just, I always say, you know, when I interact with authors or when I'm online and I'm, you know, I'm on a chat or something, I'm like, just ask and I'll be honest. And I guess you're taking me at face value too, because I'm sure there are other agents who may say that and may actually lie. So who knows? But I guess it's just one of those things where I think it's frustrating. And mm-hmm. I would be frustrated if I were an author, which is why I try to be as honest as I possibly can all the time.
Respect. Because there's very little I won't say to people's faces, which is a good and bad thing.
Oh, yeah, same. So, and same on the good and bad thing. Right? Oh, my God.
Let's see how long I survive.
Yeah, same.
So far, so good. Recent guest Rahul Mehta, who was just phenomenal to speak to, he and I spoke about him being a first-generation Indian American to parents who immigrated to the U.S. And we spoke about the different parental expectations, not just when you're a person of color, but also when you're an immigrant. And I wanted to ask, since you've spoken about this and written about this a little bit, did your family have any particular expectations for you since you're first generation? And may I also ask, is first generation a fair description in this respect?
So I've actually looked this up myself. Some people, and there's no clear, again, there's no quote unquote rule about this. Mm-hmm. People call themselves first generation if they've personally immigrated themselves. And sometimes first generation is also used as a term for the next generation, which is that the parents immigrated and the kids were born in America. So unfortunately, I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah, because I think about the latter. Many of my friends, they describe themselves as the latter because their parents immigrated and they were born and raised here. Yeah.
Right. sentences. I'm personally unclear on the terminology. I just say I'm an immigrant, which is exactly what I am.
Okay.
So I skip the generation thing. But back to your question. I mean, so my sister is a doctor, and then there's me.
This is exactly like Rahul.
But jokes aside, I think all parents have expectations, mm-hmm. really. Obviously, I think it's somewhat of a cheeky stereotype that immigrant parents have a lot of professional expectations of their children, mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to things like, you know, not being a doctor or a lawyer or a more traditional career path. First of all, I like to say that I don't really share the quote-unquote immigrant narrative that seems to be very prominent these days in social media and just generally. In that, I wasn't, like, you know, I didn't sort of come on a boat and, you know, pick mm-hmm. things up and work in McDonald's. I didn't mm-hmm. do that.
Necessarily.
Sorry?
Like, you're not a refugee.
Right. Yeah. I'm not a refugee. And I didn't immigrate under harsh circumstances. Mm-hmm. I came for college. We were always financially comfortable as well, so it wasn't like... And also, we were exposed to American media. I grew up speaking English. So, you know, yes, I am an immigrant, but my story isn't sort of the sob story that everyone expects me to have, which has been a little interesting when I encounter people who sort of make those assumptions about me. I guess, tying back to that answer, my parents didn't really have many expectations as a result. I think they expected me to excel at whatever I did, which, I mean, the jury's still out, but mm-hmm. I would also say that they didn't expect me to end up in publishing specifically, mm-hmm. which is a career that, honestly, I don't think they still quite understand. But on the flip side, I'd say I was more worried about disappointing them than should be necessary, I feel, because I did buy into that pressure mm-hmm. of making sure my parents were proud of me. And then I only realized later that pressure, that was mostly just self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. I didn't think, they didn't really do anything to make me feel that way. Mm. I think, which I don't know what that means. I think actually it still speaks to the wide gap in immigrant families between generations when it comes to things like considering a career in the media or literature or the arts. I think for me to even consider literature or just, you know, seriously pursuing a career in publishing, it was scary. It wasn't something I was necessarily actively encouraged to do, even mm-hmm. if I wasn't discouraged. So it was uncharted territory for me. And in that way, I think, I guess I felt a little out of my league mm-hmm. in some ways. And I guess my parents didn't support me, not because they didn't want to, but because they just didn't know how to. And that was a little hard. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think I'm doing okay. And they're really very supportive. They still, like I said, don't know what an agent is, though. But, you know, we're working on that.
And technically, you were on the path to become a doctor.
A different kind of doctor.
Yeah.
So not point. Necessarily even a doctor that would be better than being in publishing. So.
At the end of the day, I wonder if just doctor is enough to be able to say, my children are doctors.
Exactly. Walk it off. Move on.
Exactly. Yes. There's no more you need to know on this. Are they avid readers? Are they big book lovers as well?
My dad used to read a lot when he was younger. And he did, and both of them encouraged us, both my sister and I, to be big readers, which we are. My mom used to read a bit. I don't have men. They're not very avid readers right now, mm-hmm. but it's not like they don't read either. So it's kind of one of those, they'll read a book a year kind of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very depending on our life trajectory. We've moved around a lot as a family, and there've been a lot of things that have happened mm-hmm. that have made them not particularly inclined to read. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say that they do read. And they were very, very encouraging of my habit to read a lot. So I owe it to them.
Yay, parents! Also, a quick side note is you're not in New York, like you said. You said you moved to Connecticut. And you're still in Connecticut?
Yes, I am.
And again, another reason I like to talk to so many people is to not kind of centralize New York City as the publishing world, because... it's nice for people to know that they can do this in another state. Have you found, and again, I know it's different because there's some agencies that have their offices, but it doesn't seem like agenting is one of those positions that could be primarily done remotely.
Absolutely. I mean, I think some of the best agents right now are all remote, actually. In this day and age of everything being on email, you can even network and connect with editors. As agents, we're supposed to do that, but you can do that, you know, via email, conferences, you can meet up with people there. Queries come in through email nowadays. We personally don't accept paper queries anymore, and talk of notch either. So, yeah, absolutely. I personally think all jobs should be remote. I'm a big remote job person fan. You know, it's just, especially, I mean, obviously, if you're a doctor or anything, maybe you should, you know, check out the wounded person kind of thing. But even that I've heard you can, you know, there are doctors on Skype,
yes,
and stuff, which is amazing.
I've heard
so,
this, where you kind of like, lean up to the screen and show them like the scar on your arm and say,
I saw
that
this
look
episode
infected?
Again, I know it's TV, so who knows if it's accurate, but I saw this episode of the doctor performing surgery via Skype, and I was like, that is amazing. That is amazing.
How?
Yeah, I looked it up, and I think there are some programs that sort of, especially in war-torn areas, they have sort of Skype in doctors through Doctors Without Borders or something like that. I'm not sure, but I think that's the case. And I mean, that's such an amazing facility.
Wow.
You know, just to be able to have that kind of expertise at your fingertips, essentially.
Wow. We'll never need to leave our houses ever pretty soon.
Okay, that's a little scary, though. Please leave your houses. But
yes,
remotely.
I would advocate for leaving your house.
Yes.
You need to get up. Don't get blood clots.
You need
to actually go around.
Absolutely.
But speaking of working remotely, it's funny because I feel like I haven't touched upon this. And it is something, even though I've had guests on who are parents, including Marietta Zacher and others, the time management. And maybe time management, I feel like sometimes time management is this word thrown around that makes us feel guilty about not being better adults.
Doesn't everything make us guilty? Everything is guilt. Guilt is everything.
Yeah, but you work full time and you are a parent and you do work remotely. So let's debunk that myth that we were kind of talking about pre-recording of working at home is not working, because it is.
Yes, it absolutely is. Everyone, you hear me? I'm actually working when I say I'm working.
She is working.
Yeah, I can't speak for Jen. I don't know. First of all,
and you're a parent
is,
to a young child too, also.
Yes,
so that's
yes.
a big thing.
Yeah, she's a toddler now. Get the terminology right.
Really?
She's 15 months. I think it's important to just understand as a parent that your life is different and the demands on your time are different.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, obviously, you know, we're coming back to work after having a child is hard. I mean, it's usually pretty hard. A lot of women I know actually found it easy, depending on the jobs they had, and depending on how easy a time they had with their babies when they were young, and how much support they had. It's just very, the experience is very, so much. But at the end of the day, like I say all the time, it's really best not to compare yourself to other agents or other people in your profession, especially those who are child-free, because, I mean, really.
Oh,
if
God,
they're,
no.
Yeah.
Oh, God,
it,
no.
Yeah, it's hard, though, because in publishing tends to be a fairly young crowd. Even the professionals who aren't as young, say they're my age, not many of them are young parents, actually. This is actually one of the issues that I'm very interested in as someone who wants to work with retention and membership within the industry, especially for people of color. There tends to be a big gap between really young, straight out of college students, you know, editorial assistants, interns, then they'll be a promoter to assistant. And then, you know, there's this huge gap of that young professional working mother that's just not there. And then we have a lot of editors who have kids who are a little bit more self-sufficient, and of course editors who have older grown-up children. And I believe that the reason that that's the demographic is missing is because there's not as much support as there should be, as there could be for young mothers and young parents in the industry. I do think that that's changing. And I can definitely speak for myself when I say that my boss was incredibly supportive. And not just my boss, my clients were so great. It was hard for me to sort of come back to work and feel as though I wasn't putting in as much of myself into it as I was before I had a baby. But then everyone sat me down and said, that is obviously going to happen. And I was like, really? And they were like, yes, just accept that fact. Accept that you can't give your all to your job anymore. You're a mother too, and you have to compartmentalize your energy because there's just no other way to live. And so just being able to hear that, you know, I don't think a lot of young mothers or young parents hear that enough. You know, I feel like there's just so much pressure to bounce back right after maternity leave and, you know, just be at your peak. And, you know, it's not just about having gone through a really potentially traumatic physical experience. It's also not getting sleep for years and years and years after that. Yeah, I mean, It was challenging, but I would have to say that I think I've reached a good balance now, and I have to also give credit where credit is due. I have an amazing, supportive husband who grabs the baby when I say, I need to read this book right now because it's amazing. So, yeah, bye-bye. And he's like, okay, sure, I will take care of her. And, you know, we have a nanny too, and we're incredibly fortunate to be able to afford childcare. And a lot of people in publishing start out, especially agents, they can't afford childcare. So they work under really difficult circumstances. It's not easy concentrating with a baby in that room. Even if the baby's relatively calm, it's still kind of stressful. So yeah, I would say that it just requires a reassessment of goals and finding a community of people who support you and realizing that you're not alone. And like I said, I think it's great that more people are talking about this issue, and that where, you know, people like me and the rest of my colleagues who are working for people of color in publishing want to bring this up, in that, you know, we want there to be more support for young parents who are in publishing, just because it's not necessarily the best place for them to thrive. So, yeah.
I also wonder, in terms of what you're mentioning, for my jobs, the various jobs I've had, the maternity leave is horrible.
It's horrible. Horrible is a good word.
Italics, horrible.
It varies, though. Different companies have different policies. My boss was incredibly supportive. I started working 6 months after I gave birth, which was perfect for me. I do know mothers who were itching to go back to work after 2 weeks. I know mothers who weren't ready until 1 year. It's just one of those things where it's so dependent on your own personal circumstances. I had a relatively difficult delivery and recovery. So, you know, it took me some time to really get over the physicality of the experience. And then, of course, settling in with parenthood has its own sort of challenges. So when month three rolled in, I called my boss in a panic, and I was like, I don't think I'm ready. And she was wonderful. She was like, well, Sabah, if you're not ready, then don't come back. And just, you know, take care of your health and take care of your child. And there's literally nothing more important right now. And that is exactly what I needed to hear. So yeah, I was incredibly fortunate to have that kind of support. I do know a lot of mothers who have, you know, come month three, they're sort of given an ultimatum, come to work or you're fired. Yeah. And it's really rough because some of them can't afford to lose that job, and they're just not ready psychologically, physically, their babies aren't ready. They don't want to stop breastfeeding. There's just so many things that come into play that, you know, people don't think about, that really have a lot of emotional and actual, sometimes often physical, consequences on the family life. So yeah, it's definitely something that I'm a strong advocate for in terms of fixing the policy. But I think that in publishing in general, it really, I've been talking to a lot of editors who have young children. I always ask them about the maternity leave policy, or I ask them about how rough or not rough they had it. And it really varies. It depends on your team. It depends on how many people are watching out for you. And, you know, I feel as though things aren't as bad in publishing as they are in other industries. So that makes me feel better. Mm-hmm. But yes, I do agree that overall maternity leave policies in this country are very restrictive.
Yeah. And also when we were talking about with the kind of putting your pressure on yourself, I wonder, I know for me, and then the marriage didn't work out anyway, so it was a win. But for me, I felt like I couldn't move up if I had a kid. So I would personally freak out, because when I was an assistant trying to move up the ladder, I said, I can't have a kid now because then I'll never move up. I have to move up and then have a kid. So I wonder if that also plays into it, of this kind of, I need to establish myself before I even think of procreating, which is kind of ridiculous.
It's a very unfortunate amount of pressure that most women face, especially. And I'm not going to lie, when I got pregnant in my first year of agenting, I was terrified. Mm. I didn't know what it would mean for my career. And my boss, though, was very supportive. She was like, well, you know, you have to, if you want to start a family, then this is the right time for you and you should go for it. And just think of it as a break. The fact that you'll be raring to go afterwards should motivate you to do both. I think it's important to encourage women who want to have families to be pregnant or just have children in whatever way they choose to feel empowered with that choice, mm-hmm. and not feel as though they have to pick between one or the other.
Yes.
Just because that pressure is really mm-hmm. unfair, especially from a sexist standpoint, because, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. nothing happens to men's careers when they become parents, right?
Right.
So it's not really just a question of maternity leave and having the baby. It's also, you know, how much time you're perceived to have missed and sort of the FOMO of it all, you know? I have to say, I was insecure, and now I'm not, because I realized that I just had to look at it differently. Just think about it as a sabbatical, really. It's one, for me, it took a year, and I know it takes a different amount of time for different women, but for me, it took a year to really just disengage, not think about work, focus on my child, focus on this one other thing about my life that I need to achieve and that I need to sort of accomplish in some senses, mm-hmm. and then go back to my career and then sort of really put my heart and soul into it. And I think I'm in a good place. I'm fortunate that, like I said, I have some great supportive boss, my husband's there, and like I feel as though I'm not restricted just because I have a daughter. But I think it varies from industry to industry as well. I think mm-hmm. a lot of what is psychological, though, can be mitigated by just showing more support. And yeah. I wish that we just did that more. And I also always say, because I have to, since I'm the mother in my group, I'm the literal mother in my group of mm-hmm. friends. If you're thinking of having children, and you know that, you know, in some senses, the biological clock is ticking, because there is such a thing as a biological clock, it is important to get that done and get it out of the way. I really do believe that, because you just have to accept the fact that you are going to lose out on opportunities when you're pregnant and when you're sort of a new mother. It happens. It happened to me. I watched people do well, not just professionally, but around me, just hiking mountains, and I was just like, well, I'm stuck here with a baby, you mm-hmm. know. And it was hard, but it was temporary, and now I'm back, and I feel as though it was totally worth it, and I'm glad I did it. So and I also don't feel as though I am disadvantaged in any way. So
great.
Yeah.
Awesome. I also really, I remembered that actually I had a boss who reacted a certain way when I had a pregnancy scare. And that is what I was like, oh no. She was actually disappointed when I said I was pregnant.
That's terrible.
Oh yeah. She had this face of, oh. So I'm very glad to hear that you have a very supportive boss.
I do. She's amazing.
Who
oh
talked
my
you
goodness.
Off of ledges, she, rather than saying, oh, that's inconvenient.
Honestly, for me, if it weren't for her, I don't know if I would still be in the industry. It's so tough, you know, with agenting, not, you know, being so hard to get into, to sustain a career. And she's just so wonderful. She's my mentor. And it's just so important to have mentors in professions like ours. So, yeah, I owe a lot to her.
Mm. Yay, your boss.
Yes.
We need more of you in the other area of publishing.
I know. That'd we need great. More of you everywhere. Everywhere.
So getting back to the difficulties within agenting, that's everyone else's individual journey, but there is the monetary issue that I've spoken to with like the WNDB interns about, and I had spoken to Marietta about it, in terms of we had 4 interns who were in agenting specifically, and 2 of them left agenting for various reasons. Maybe they just felt like it didn't go fit, but I did ask them. They're still in publishing. They went to like big 5 houses, but one of the things they said was the money. They were freaking out over money. They're like, I'm freaking out a little bit. And the other 2, I hope, stay in agenting or some realm of publishing. The maternal person in me is very like, you need to look out for yourself. You need to eat.
Absolutely.
And then the, you know, advocate in me is, we lost 2 agents. Yeah. You know, agents in the pipeline. So what are some things that you suggest budding agents pursue? What are the realities of doing the work you do, especially when it comes to promotion and how an agency is run? And I know, again, that different agencies run differently, but essentially you do need to make money from your client.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's not, like I said, completely philanthropical. Yeah, I would say it's an incredible privilege for me to be able to build a career in agenting, given that it is indeed not salaried. And I always acknowledge that privilege. I think a lot of people come up to me asking me about, you know, asking me for advice on whether or not they should pursue it or think about an interning. And I always say, in terms of actually building a career in agenting, you need to have a financial plan. You need to understand that you don't see money for a very long time, and you may not see a lot of it for an even longer time. And it's not just the financials. Agents often work remotely, and remote work can be isolating for some people. It's a lot of long hours. You
it's
know,
travel.
I read on weekends because I have to work on clients and other stuff during the week. And you may not see a payoff for years and years. So it's a very tough job in many ways. You really do have to be very passionate about the specifics of what you actually do as an agent to want to be an agent because of all of these caveats. Of course, like you said, not all agencies operate in the same way. Some agencies can pay you to assist, which is great. But that means you'll be building your list in your own time. So that's a little more pressure time-wise. Mm. And some agencies have a promotion structure in place, which is sort of clear, and that, in a couple of years, this is what's going to happen. And some agencies don't. So I think that really varies across the gamut. It's also sometimes dependent on how many sales you make and how often versus how long you've been at the agency. So I guess if I had to advise someone, I usually say, you know, obviously, first do your research. It's the best course of action. Try to reach out to agents in different kinds of agencies. Or if not, if you can't have access to them in terms of, you know, just approaching them and like, hey, talk to me about your job. I think the best thing to do is, you know, tap into your networks. If you went to college somewhere or you went to a specific workshop or something, you know, look up other past attendance or past students, and a lot of us are willing to talk to people. I talk to people who went to my college all the time. Mm-hmm. I give them career advice and I let them know what I do and, you know, what are the good things and what are the bad things, and I sort of try and assess through our conversation whether or not they might be a fit. There are large agencies, there are mid-size, there are boutique, there are agencies based in New York City, there are agencies that all there are 5 agencies sharing 1 office in New York City. And I mean, you have to take into account the physicality of working as an agent too. It can get really cramped. I've seen some of their working conditions. This stuff has a big bearing on how much you enjoy your job. You know, people don't think about it, but it does. And like I said, and the extreme opposite of that spectrum is working completely remotely. So you never see a single person ever in your life for years if you don't make the effort to be social. or, you know, you have no real office. A lot of agencies don't have actual physical offices. Mm-hmm. I mean, being an agent is a career driven almost entirely by passion. You meet the most intelligent, engaging, and incredibly driven people who are also bookish, which is like ding, ding, ding. So mm-hmm. it's great, but it's important to know, and I always say that it does come with difficulties and mm-hmm. some very real initial difficulties. So I always say that it's good to know going in mm-hmm. how important it is to you to make a certain amount of money before a certain amount of time mm-hmm. and really assess that about your personality or about your own financial circumstances, whatever mm-hmm. they may be, because you're right, being an agent is very tough in that regard. Mm.
Great advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Keeping it real. I like when people keep it real.
What if, I can't imagine answering that question any other way, but would someone say, come be an agent, there's a pot at the end of the rainbow, because there really isn't. So, yeah, there's no pot, but there are great books, lots of great books, lots yeah. of great people, an amazing community.
I hope that sells people.
Yeah, like, maybe not in that deadpan tone, but, you know, I'm usually better in, you know, when I have to convince someone to try agenting, especially because so many people are wide-eyed about editorial. And I mean, I was yes. too, so I understand why. But a lot of people I know are better personality fits for agenting. And I'm always like, you know, you should try it because I think you'd like it more, even though it's not as quote-unquote glamorous or mm-hmm. more publicly understandable, if that mm-hmm. makes any sense. Like, being a literary agent is just kind of confusing for most people who don't really understand how it works, and that always makes people who are considering it feel like, oh, do I want to do this thing? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are all of these things. Sometimes those things matter. Self-image matters a lot, and if it mm. matters to you that people understand what you do, then be an editor, because people understand what editing is. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to really think about what you prioritize in terms of a career, and I think that varies so much from person to person that it's very difficult to answer a question like this, mm-hmm. you know, in broad terms.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So in your free time.
Free time?
You contribute to the PubHub site. Mm-hmm. And that, for people who don't know, PubHub doles out publishing advice from different people in the industry. So it includes some industry insiders like yourself, professionals, as well as writers. I think the bulk of contributors seems to be writers thus far.
I think actually it's a good mix, but the writers are the ones who have more free time. So
you know what that is? Procrastination.
I don't know. I didn't say anything.
I will serve as the writer's rep, because it's like, I will always do a blog post before I go back to a manuscript.
Well, see, then I see where that's coming from. So.
And I really appreciate your posts, because you've discussed not rushing revisions, which I know people do as soon as they hear a yes or I'm interested. You just kind of just like jump on it and say, okay, oh my gosh, this is the only yes I'll ever get in my life. You also talked about the inability to read due to medical reasons, which I think is definitely not talked about, as well as diversity as a trend, which has been discussed on this podcast as well. And I would like to know if you know what's been the response from those who've read PubHub, and also in terms of being someone who offers this kind of advice, do you consider this part of the job of an agent, or really, like I said, you... this kind of literary citizenship work, even though you said it's not philanthropic, it is that generosity on your part to offer these kind of tidbits that people don't talk about.
Well, in terms of a response, I think I've received positive responses on the whole. Mm-hmm. Well, no one sent me hate mail, if that's what you're asking. PubHub's a great platform to talk about the business of writing mm-hmm. and selling books. And Kate Browning is amazing. Everyone should follow her. She's really, really smart and mm-hmm. devoted to publishing. And she also tweets out and writes about really important issues in publishing. Mm-hmm. So she invited me. And oh, wonderful. I really owe her a new blog. But anywho,
you're working. It's cool.
Yeah. I'm working the blog. I'm publicizing the blog. I hope that helps. But yeah, I think it's been a great experience. But in terms of whether sort of, I guess, being a literary citizen in this way is part of the job, I actually don't think it's a part of the job. I don't think it should be necessarily, but it's what I enjoy doing. I think plenty of agents don't have blogs or engage at all with social media, and they're very good agents. And that is their job, to be agents, to be author advocates. Mm-hmm. And a lot of information about writing and publishing is freely available and out there for those willing to search for it. Of course, more information is available to people willing to pay for it, but I think that's only fair.
That's true.
Agents have busy schedules and their own professional and personal commitments, and so I don't think they're beholden to the literary community to dispense their expertise, especially if that expertise is how they make their money. So, no, actually, I don't think it's part of the job, but I do enjoy doing it, so that's why I do it. I enjoy being a part of the community, and sort of, if I have something to say that I think is useful, that, and most of my posts are motivated by questions I actually receive in real life or trends I see in my query box. I like to address those trends just so that, you know, everyone has a chance to learn from everybody else's mistakes or misconceptions, rather.
And it is interesting because I appreciate you also saying that this information is readily available, because I'm sure you get the same questions, the same submissions, even though you've talked about it. What you want, what you don't want.
You know, it's amazing how many people ask you questions whose answers are literally just, let me Google that for you, you know? So, which is why I don't think, again, like I said, it's really not our jobs to be telling you all of these things. But if we choose to do it, it's because we love our job so much, and we like the idea of helping people, or, you know, we feel as though it's just easy enough for us to write up a quick blog post explaining something in simpler terms. If there have been questions regarding resources that are more difficult to access, or, you know, there are some people who, you know, who can't afford memberships to, you know, author advocacy organizations or AAR or Authors Guild. And, you know, these are the organizations that give you access to all of these things for free, or like, you know, the model contract book, which is free if you're an Authors Guild member. I understand, you know, not everyone can afford it. Not everyone knows about this, which is, again, something they should Google. But, you know, that's why blogs like PubHub exist, and that's why they're so useful. For the writing community, and I love being a part of it, so that's why I do it.
PubHub people, as well as things like Writers Beware and Query Shark, they're all fantastic resources people do on their quote-unquote free time.
I like to call it positive procrastination.
I think so. Blogging is fun. And it helps me y'all about great dessert places.
Some people make all of their money from blogging. That is the life.
I know.
Yes.
Living the dream. Thank you so much, Saba, for being on this episode and for just expounding on your personal experiences, your professional experiences. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I, again, want to just tell you how much I appreciate the work you do and you taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed the conversation too. Thank you.
No problem. And how may people reach out to you in terms of social media? And do not query her via social media.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that very much. I'm on Twitter. My handle is Agent Saba. That's AgentSaba. You can always look me up on the internet. I have a webpage as well, sabasuleiman.com, which is my full name.com. I think Twitter is the best place. I'm pretty approachable, or at least I like to think I am.
And you go to conferences pretty regularly, too.
Oh, yeah, I do. I try to go to one every month. I feel like that's a good balance.
That's a decent.
And I have a list of all of the conferences that I'm attending this year on my website, so you can check that out. And, you know, if you're local or if you're going to be in the area, drop by. I'd love to meet.
Wonderful. Yay.
Yay.
So thank you again for being on. And again, for listeners, this is Minorities in Publishing, which you can find on iTunes. And feel free to rate the podcast on iTunes if you like, as well as Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com and on Twitter at minoritiesinpub.